This is Free Speech Radio News for Wednesday, May 16th, 2012. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, the fallout from J.P. Morgan's loss of $2 billion in trading sparks renewed calls for regulation and a defense of risky practices. In Bahrain, security forces detain protest leaders in early morning raids, and the government brings a prominent critic to court to face charges. And across the country, states are slashing social services. We'll go to Pennsylvania, where activists fight to protect public education. Those stories and more, but first, this news.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for FSRN. Today, a historic trial got underway at the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia in The Hague. Former Serb commander Ratko Mladic is facing charges related to ethnic cleansing during the 1992 to 1995 Bosnian War. Tribunal spokesperson Nurma Jalakic spoke about the opening of the trial this morning.
It started with the opening statement of the prosecution, in which they laid out all of the evidence that they had gathered and are planning to present in the course of this trial, where they're charging him with genocide and crimes against humanity.
Mladic pleaded not guilty to 11 counts of war crimes, which included the massacre of more than 7,000 Muslims in Srebrenica. The sentencing hearing of former Liberian leader Charles Taylor is also underway at The Hague. The special court for Sierra Leone convicted him of war crimes in April. The prosecution wants the former president jailed for 80 years. Taylor addressed the court today, denying his guilt and pleading for a lesser sentence.
I'm 64 years old and not young anymore. I am of no threat to society. I say with respect, reconciliation and healing, not retribution, should be the guiding principles in your honor's task.
Taylor said money played a corrupting, influential, significant, and dominant role in his trial. In Germany, anti-austerity demonstrators converged on European Central Bank headquarters in Frankfurt, kicking off what is planned to be 4 days of Blockupy Frankfurt protests. Blockupy is a European offshoot of the Occupy movement. A few hundred permanent protesters were removed from a camp outside the Central Bank building this morning. Online video shows lines of activists sitting peacefully before being moved by police. Officials have said the camp can resume after the larger protest ends. Activists say police have blocked off access to the city's financial district and that many shops have closed. Reuters reports that the city has 5,000 police on standby for the protest. President Obama today signed an executive order freezing U.S.-based assets of people the White House says threatens Yemen's peace, security, and stability. The Yemeni government, with the backing of the United States, also continued military action against al-Qaeda. The military told press that about 30 militants were killed in airstrikes in the southern part of the country. This is the third day in a row of attacks against al-Qaeda. Suspected U.S. drone strikes on Tuesday killed a number of civilians. Many countries, including the U.S., have been griping about the European Union requiring foreign airlines to take part in Europe's greenhouse gas reduction program. But as a key deadline for compliance passes, only China and India are refusing to cooperate. From France, FSRN's Liam Moriarty reports.
The U.S., Canada, Russia, Brazil, China, India, all these countries and more insist Europe has no right to require non-European air carriers to pay for their carbon emissions on flights into or out of EU airports. No one will have to actually pay until next year, so most airlines are complying under protest, at least for now, by submitting their emissions data to EU countries in which they operate. But China has prohibited their air carriers from complying. India has urged theirs not to cooperate either. EU climate chief Connie Hedegaard says the deadline has been extended for now.
Of course, our member states' competent authorities have already contacted the relevant Indian and Chinese airlines to remind them of their obligations, and they have been given until mid-June this year to report back their data.
Foreign airlines that don't comply risk fines or even being banned from EU airports. The dissenting countries have threatened to retaliate against European airlines, but the EU insists that in the absence of a comparable international carbon reduction agreement, it will enforce its law. Liam Moriarty, FSRN, Normandy, France.
A new political group hoping to provide a viable third-party option in this year's presidential race said Tuesday that none of its potential candidates have collected enough national supporters to qualify for an online convention scheduled for June. Americans Elect Party CEO Khalil Byrd said the group's own rules dictate that the primary process officially ended yesterday because of the missed deadline. But Byrd also said that the party would confer with its community and announce an official decision about its future tomorrow. There's speculation that party leadership might change its rules in order to be able to nominate a candidate. And that's headlines for FSRN. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns.
I'm Dorian Marina in Los Angeles. The revelation that J.P. Morgan lost at least $2 billion in the derivatives market has led to resignations of top executives and prompted federal probes of the bank's practices. It's also sparked calls for more regulation and oversight of the financial sector. On Capitol Hill, some lawmakers are fighting further implementation of the Dodd-Frank reforms, while others say more government scrutiny of too-big-to-fail institutions could prevent similar losses in the future. Reporting from Washington, FSRN's Alice Olstein has the details.
With much still unknown about the details of the bad trades and the full extent of the fallout, J.P. Morgan's financial woes are drawing the attention of several branches of government. The FBI, Federal Reserve, and Securities and Exchange Commission are all investigating what led to the more than $2 billion loss, seeking to hold accountable anyone who broke the law. Others in Congress are looking at the laws themselves. At Wednesday's congressional hearing on systemically significant financial institutions, also known as corporations that are too big to fail, J.P. Morgan's actions were front and center. In his opening statement, Texas Democrat Al Green said the company's mistakes show the need for stronger federal action.
Of one thing I am totally, absolutely, and completely convinced, too big to fail is the right size to regulate.
But others on the committee, including Alabama Republican Spencer Baucus, say reform advocates are getting worked up over a minor issue, since J.P. Morgan has said it has enough capital to absorb the loss.
Unless the facts are diametrically different from what we've heard, there is no risk from this loss to depositors or to taxpayers. They remain a very profitable, viable institution.
Baucus has received $11,000 in donations from J.P. Morgan so far this year. Professor Gerald Epstein with the Political Economy Research Institute said the company's bet could be an indication of more widespread risk-taking in the financial sector.
If J.P. Morgan Chase is doing this, then presumably there are many other of these large banks that are doing this kind of thing and are putting the financial system at risk. So the problem isn't just what J.P. Morgan loses or doesn't lose. The problem is the fallout from this kind of activity for the rest of the economy, for workers and for homeowners and so forth.
But Epstein says the crisis at J.P. Morgan could have some positive ramifications, including stopping what he calls the gutting of Dodd-Frank.
There's been a four-pronged strategy that both Republicans and with the help of some Democrats, and the banking industry has pursued, first of all, when it was first being written to try to put in these loopholes. Second of all, to now try to widen the loopholes that are there. Third of all, they're supporting Congress people who are trying to underfund the regulatory agencies so they can't really implement these rules properly. And finally, some of them are involved in suing the SEC and other regulators when they do try to implement rules to try to prevent them from doing it.
In the nearly 2 years since the Dodd-Frank financial reform bill became law, J.P. Morgan has spent more than $10 million on lobbying. And though they've given to both Republicans and Democrats, including President Obama, the biggest share of their political donations so far this year has gone to Mitt Romney, who has vowed to repeal Dodd-Frank. White House spokesperson Jake Carney addressed this directly on Tuesday.
There are those who remain on Capitol Hill and elsewhere, including those who would be president, who say we should repeal Wall Street reform. We should go back to a system where Wall Street writes its own rules and where, when disastrously bad decisions are made, the taxpayer is left to pick up the pieces. The president's not going to go there.
As more details about the J.P. Morgan incident emerge, Carney said Obama will push for the implementation of the Volcker Rule, a not-yet-finalized piece of the Dodd-Frank financial reforms that would restrict banks from making speculative bets with the public's money for their own profit. The rule was scheduled to go into effect this summer, but opposition from J.P. Morgan, other major banks, and some politicians has slowed the process, and the Federal Reserve reported to Congress they will not be able to meet that deadline. Alice Olstein, FSRN, Washington.
In Bahrain, activists say security forces have arrested at least 13 pro-democracy leaders in a series of pre-dawn raids throughout the country. The Bahrain Youth Society for Human Rights said security forces stormed homes in 16 different villages early this morning. The crackdown on dissent in the Persian Gulf island state has continued for more than a year. And just last week, the Obama administration said it will resume a controversial deal to sell arms to the government. Bahrain, which is home to a key U.S. Navy fleet in the region, also brought charges today against a prominent critic of the regime, Nabil Rajab. Rajab was arrested earlier this month upon his return from Lebanon and is accused of inciting rallies and protests with his online activities. For more, we're joined by Mohammed Al-Maskati, president of the Bahrain Youth Society for Human Rights. His organization has been monitoring the raids. He joins us by mobile phone from Manama. Welcome to FSRN.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much for your covering on Bahrain situation.
You report that these raids took place between 2 and 5 a.m. early this morning. How are families describing what happened?
Actually, from 2 to 5 early morning today, we get surprised that the security forces raided more than 15 villages in Bahrain. They also trying to arrest all the protesters who are leading the protests inside these villages. According to our information, at least 14 protesters get arrested, and the rest who are wanted, they are not present at that time in their houses.
And these people, had they been involved in some of these pro-democracy protests, is that why you think they were targeted?
Yeah, most of them, they are leading of this protest, not only participants, but they also they are leading of this protest, and they are the main organizer of the peaceful protest in the villages.
These raids that you're describing, how unusual are they? What are the methods that the security forces of the government is using against protesters now?
Mostly now, the security forces using the birdshot, or what we call it, the gunshot. We have a lot of injuries of using that birdshot. Actually, this injured, they cannot go to hospital because of fear to arrest. So we have problem now with a lot of injuries, a lack of medical care.
Other human rights activists still remain detained, including Nabil Rajab, who was detained and he faced a court today. He still remains in detention. He's been a guest on our program in the past. Do you know what his status is?
Actually, Nabil Rajab, he was present today before the court. It's clear that the authority want to target the human rights defenders, especially because they are working hard to expose human rights violations happening in Bahrain. And Nabil Rajab, Zainab Al-Khawaja, and Abdelhadi Al-Khawaja is well-known human rights defender in Bahrain. And the authority know that they are working hard to expose human rights violations and trying to stop violation by the authorities.
The U.S. announced last Friday that it would resume selling arms to the government in Bahrain, a $53 million deal that was previously blocked after the U.S. came under pressure. What are you calling for from the U.S. and from the international community?
Actually, this is a very negative message to the pro-democracy protester in Bahrain. That's clear that USAID not caring about, not caring for the human rights and democracy in Bahrain. We call the international community and we call the U.S. administration to support the human rights defender and pro-democracy protester, and also to support their principles in Bahrain, because as we see only a statement and we don't see action from international community of what happened in Bahrain.
And the 14 people that were taken in these raids early this morning, do you know where they are? Do you know what their status is, if they're still in detention?
Nothing, no information. They don't give any information. Their houses broken heavily by the security forces.
So as of now, their families don't know where they are?
No, they don't know any information about their situation.
Mohammed Al-Maskati is president of the Bahrain Youth Society for Human Rights. He joined us from Manama in Bahrain. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
This Thursday, join FSRN for an in-depth interview exploring the Occupy movement.
A spark took off, and it is the first significant organized activist response to an assault on the population that's been going on for over 30 years.
Author, historian, linguist, and activist Noam Chomsky talks to FSRN about what this new movement has accomplished and where it's going. That's this Thursday on your local station and at FSRN.org. At the United Nations, indigenous leaders are meeting to discuss rights, inequalities, and past injustices. Despite the landmark UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples adopted 5 years ago, critics say many countries lag far behind in implementation of past recommendations. They point to ongoing abuses in indigenous communities, including in land and resource rights, cultural preservation, and religious freedom. FSRN's Salim Rizvi reports.
Addressing the 11th session of the UN Forum on Indigenous Issues, Deputy Secretary General Asha Rose Migro said a great deal more needs to be done to meet their goals.
We do not have to search hard to find indigenous peoples facing discrimination, persecution, displacement, even extinction. There are indigenous communities that lack clean drinking water, whose children go hungry, whose women suffer gross abuses and never see the perpetrators brought to justice.
The UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples that was adopted in 2007, after more than two decades of debate, establishes the individual and collective rights of indigenous peoples and declares them equal to all other peoples. The document is non-binding, but it's still considered a landmark agreement to recognize the rights of indigenous peoples. In the last decade, the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues has recommended several measures to ensure the protection and promotion of rights of indigenous peoples. This year, around 2,000 indigenous delegates have come from all corners of the globe to attend the annual session. But some of them say it's taking too long to implement the recommendations. Agnes Lina is the executive director of Ila Ramatak Community Concerns, a Kenyan indigenous peoples organization.
There are still so many things. The implementation of everything is the biggest problem, because we talk and talk, we give recommendations upon recommendations, but the implementation is very slow. But however slow it is, it had better happen. At the end of the day, let it happen. That is what we are trying to push for.
Article 3 of the UN Declaration says that indigenous peoples have the right to self-determination and to determine their political status. The declaration also seeks to ensure the protection of their cultural, economic, and social rights. It specially emphasizes that control by indigenous people over developments affecting them and their lands and resources will help them maintain and strengthen their institutions, cultures, and traditions, but in many countries, indigenous people still face hardships. Policarpo Chak is a Guatemalan delegate.
It is a very hard time of the Guatemalan people because the actual president of Guatemala, he was part of the army who killed indigenous population in the past. We hope that in the future, the permanent forum or the human rights secretariat help us to put a pressure over the Guatemalan government that to ask them respect indigenous people rights, because Guatemala was adopted that indigenous rights, but in the practice don't apply.
The UN Declaration has led many countries to make laws and policies that better protect the rights of indigenous peoples, but often these protections aren't implemented. In 2009, among other recommendations, the Permanent Forum recommended that countries ensure that multinational companies working on projects on indigenous peoples' lands comply with the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. In many countries, despite laws prohibiting land grabs, indigenous peoples' lands are still being taken away. Again, Agnes Liner from Kenya.
Land has been taken for agricultural purposes. Land has been taken for commercial purposes such as the parks, such that now it attracts a lot of tourists to come and visit the land. But we have continued to be pushed as indigenous people in Kenya. We have continued to be pushed and be pushed such that we no longer have a lot of space to live in.
After years of refusal, the United States endorsed the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples in December 2010. But the endorsement only goes so far. There's a lot to be done to resolve long-standing disputes over discrimination and resource rights, as well as protecting sacred sites. Some tribal leaders also complain that the government keeps many tribes out of the list of the federally recognized tribes. Kaleen Sisk is the chief of Winnemem Wintu tribe in California. Her tribe is not officially recognized, and they are struggling to privately use a lake in their territory for an important ceremony this month for the next tribal chief.
Unrecognized means that you'll absolutely have no rights to anything. You only have rights to your own traditions, your own ceremonies, the right to hold them. So every time that we practice our way of life, we go out and gather medicines, we're breaking the law.
The UN Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, James Anaya, appealed to the US to adopt more robust measures to address the serious issues affecting Native Americans. He said there is evidence that Native Americans face racial discrimination and abuse in many spheres of life. This year's special theme, the Doctrine of Discovery, which deals with the right to redress for occupying lands, also encourages countries to acknowledge the past injustices and abuses against indigenous peoples. Agnes Liner from Kenya favors a positive attitude.
We have talked negatively all the years. We would like that to change. You know, let's have a better history. Let's start talking positively. Let's see the changes.
After 2 weeks of intense debates at the United Nations, the activists and community members will again meet in 2014 at the UN World Conference on Indigenous Peoples to gauge the state of implementation of indigenous peoples' human rights. Salim Rizvi, FSRN, New York.
Across the country, states are cutting social spending to cope with falling tax revenue. In Pennsylvania, the Republican governor's proposed budget has outraged activists across the state. And an alternative plan approved by the state Senate last week maintains deep cuts to public services. But some are pushing a different strategy. They're demanding the state restore spending on education and programs for the poor, and close tax loopholes on wealthy corporations. FSRN's Jessel Noor reports.
In front of the Prince Music Theater, hundreds of students, parents, teachers, elected officials, and members of Occupy Philly held a march and rally to demand increased funding to public services. Protesters are angry that Governor Tom Corbett's $27.1 billion budget proposal includes millions in cuts to social spending. 57-year-old Philadelphia resident Irving Jones laid down with five others in front of the entrance of the theater where Corbett was speaking to demonstrate their opposition to the cuts.
The message is enough over our dead bodies. He's going to have to walk over us, and we need to take the time to understand that there are no more cutbacks. and we'll take no more.
Governor Corbett, where are you? The people want to speak to you. Governor Corbett, where are you? The people want to speak to you.
I'm a city government official who's horrified by what our governor is trying to do.
Lance Haver, Director of Consumer Affairs for Philadelphia, criticized the governor for cutting nearly $150 million in cash assistance grants while giving corporations a $275 million tax break.
He is trying to reach into the pockets of those who are in their most desperate parts of their lives and take the $205 a month stipend that they get away from them and give it to multinational corporations in the form of tax cuts. Now, that's without the promise of a single job being created. That's without the promise of these corporations doing anything. So what he's saying basically is people who find themselves in desperate situations, he's going to step on them, squeeze everything he can out of them, and give whatever they have to the corporations and not care about people in desperate situations.
Many are also criticizing cuts to public education. Already, school districts, colleges, and universities are contending with more than $1 billion cut last year. 16-year-old Philadelphia high school student and activist Cheyenne Williams says public schools already are plagued by a lack of resources.
Well, already, like, our classes are already crowded, and the hallways are crowded, it's drama, bullies every day, and it's just ridiculous, like, and there's not even that many students in my school. It's only 9th and 10th graders, but it seems like so much. So when they pack more students into the school, it's just going to make it worse.
While the governor's 2013 budget includes a $300 million increase to the public school employees' retirement system, it also includes deep cuts to programs and services. Inside the Prince Theater, Corbett defended his proposal, saying it's not what he wants to do, but they had to put the state on a diet. In order to deal with the budget shortfall, the Philadelphia School Reform Commission has proposed a dramatic restructuring, which would include closing dozens of schools and laying off hundreds of workers while expanding charter schools. Philadelphia parent activist Helen Gim says the city's fiscal crisis is being used as an excuse to privatize one of the country's largest public school systems for corporate profit.
Naomi Klein coined the term the shock doctrine to describe a situation in which disasters, perceived or real, man-made or natural, are exploited in order to do complete overhauls of the public good for private gain. And that's definitely what we've seen in Philadelphia.
Another protester, public school teacher Anissa Weingrub, says privately managed charter schools are part of a top-down approach to education reform that stifles grassroots community efforts to improve education.
And in fact, what we're saying in Philadelphia is there's greatness on the ground. There are so many good ideas with teachers, with students, with student organizing, with parent groups. And so if actually the way to transform our schools is not to shut them down or hand them over to the highest bidder, but to allow us the resources, stability, and commitment to actually be able to transform our schools from within.
An alternative budget passed in Pennsylvania State Senate last week restores some of the governor's education cuts, but many programs will still be slashed. Activists promised to continue fighting the cuts in the weeks leading up to the budget's scheduled implementation on July 1st. Jessel Noor, FSRN, Philadelphia.
That's it for today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Headlines editor was Jess Burns. Our Washington, D.C. editor, Alice Olstein. Our technical production team at KPFA Berkeley is Janine Etter and Shauna Ray. We welcome your questions, comments, and news tips. Write to us, comments@fsrn.org. For more news stories, specials, and our documentaries, visit our website, fsrn.org, and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fsrn. Thanks for listening today. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina.